Please pull up a seat and wind down. With your sojourn on Rokinshima a pleasant one, the Witch of Truth has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
Hello, and welcome to a hidden tea party. My name is Courtney, I'm the Witch of Video Games, and these are my guests.
Hi, I'm Jess, my pronouns are they, them, and I have spent the time between recordings reading all of episodes 1 to 4 on the Let's Play and making notes and stuff, so I feel like an Umineko academic at this point.
Ooh, coming in with that witch qualification.
Umen academic. Hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are they, them. I have a question for the pod. Telltale games count as visual novels?
I'd say yes. Ooh. I would say yes.
Yeah, I like a Telltale game. Yeah.
But I'd say they're point and click enough in the visual novel direction.
I'm just thinking that, like, if I ever get a chance to recommend a visual novel to the pod, actually what I pick is Wolf Among Us.
It's a good VN, sort of. Good point and click VN.
I have played the first Walking Dead. It was good. It was stressful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Write in if we shouldn't touch Telltale games. Write in if we should.
I've enjoyed my time with Telltale games. I did have a massive Walking Dead phase as a teenager, and so, like, I know that's scams. A little bit biased, but also, if this is gonna be, like, a love letter to, like, being a cringe teenager, which I think this kind of is, perhaps we shall revisit some of my cringe teenage obsessions.
Excuse you. I'll have you know I did not start reading Umineko till I was solidly in my 20s.
I think it would be better if you had read this before.
He was like, you didn't admit to this.
We've had some guests who are into this when they were a teenager. No, I was aware, and I loved it, so bite me. No, don't, actually.
That might happen, I'm afraid.
I do have some results to report back. I don't know if you guys remember this. We did do a poll a while ago.
Did we?
See if our listeners knew who was baby. And they did correctly guess that Rowan was, in fact, baby.
Aww.
So either we mentioned it on the pod or they just sussed it out from the vibes. And honestly, both of those appeal to me.
Baby vibes. Dear. What was the split? No. Like, did anyone, like was it like 70-30?
I think basically everyone guessed Rowan.
I think
so. Yeah. Either all the people who voted already know us, or...
Yeah.
I'm, like, quite considerably baby, right? Like, there's a good few years.
Yeah. There's a George and Shannon amount of years.
6 years.
Oh, yes!
Six years of baby.
6 years of baby.
Which is why whenever, so this is deep pod lore, this is whenever deep we're all lore. Talking in the Discord, I feel like an absolute grandma because I'm there posting my little emojis and stuff, and these two are too young to do emojis, really.
And I'm do like, emojis. I do like the skull emoji and
yeah,
nothing
but
else.
I'm like, I use my little, my tongue face emoji, my cry laughing emoji, you know, the typical like zillennial like Facebook emojis, and I'm like, I feel so old.
Yes, I love the tongue sticking out emoji because I use it whenever I want to channel Jess. Because
no!
Like, that's the best emoji. It's so good. Please never stop doing it.
I will admit that I've been using the custom Discord emoji that Courtney has set up with Erica Ferrudo's like one eyebrow up face.
Oh yeah.
When people are just being like untowardly horny, and I want to be like, ew, because I do think that Erica Ferrudo face really captures like disgust and contempt in a way that few other things do. I'm a really
You're
big
so
fan.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm old Erica enough Ferrudo. That I don't know how to use Discord custom emojis.
I love that.
Incredible.
Well, when you work it out, Jess, you're going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Speaking of Jess being unstoppable, popping off on the Tumblr, as always. I know we usually promote it at the end, but, like, do check out the Tumblr.
Yeah, one of our Tumblr users has already asked to marry me over my Battle of Ushuramiya, my immortal copy pasta, so there you go.
And honestly, they're right. That is high art.
Gracious. This is like, that's what fame is like, right? Like, this
yeah, I think
we're
so.
Like actually internet celebrities. Now we've got someone
I feel
asking
like one.
To marry.
Yeah.
I did have a friend say that they deleted Twitter after the pod Twitter got taken down.
They realized because that was the only reason they were there.
Look at what you've done, Elon. That's
well,
all
like,
I'm gonna say.
One of the few reasons I was still on Twitter was just the pod Twitter, and after that left, I didn't really have a lot else to be sticking around for, so I deleted the app. And I was like,
incredible.
Right, shall we get into our reading?
I suppose we should.
We read chapter 18, Red and Blue Truth, and we also read both Tea Parties. If you have not read them, please stop listening, there will be spoilers, unless you don't care about spoilers, and you're living life on the edge. So, we open, and at the wedding, Erica and Battler's lovely wedding, there has been a bit of a development. A letter has arrived on Beatrice's stationery. Naturally, everyone's kind of freaking out about this.
Well, kind of. Like, Burncastle and Erica are apparently, like, and the narration says, of course, because apparently this is just them. They're both drunk.
I imagine this had to be cut from the PS3 version because of underage drinking.
Oh, yeah, like, unacceptable. Definitely the most unacceptable thing that's happened in this chapter, in this episode. This letter arrives and, like, Lambda's approached by Chiesta, head of security, and she thinks at first, before the letter arrives, that she's in trouble because she was bowling into a champagne tower. She was like, this is because I knocked down that champagne tower, isn't it? Whoopsie, I'm gonna get ejected from the party.
I like to imagine that the Chiesas are busy just like up to shenanigans. Like, now I'm aware of this like element, this clumsy element of their party, their personality. In the background of any of the rest of the wedding scene, I'm imagining bunny girls sort of like doing cartoon bits, like stepping on rakes and them like hitting them square in the forehead, or like walking under a ladder and something falls on them, you know.
I love clumsy
things that people do.
You know, clumsy shit.
Yeah. Things like what I did yesterday, where I had ordered a coffee from Greg's and then it spilt the entire thing over that little table they have at the back where you have the stirrers and stuff.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe you're an IRL Chiesta.
I know, right. The worst thing about it was that I went up and I was like, I'm so sorry, I've spilt this. They not only made me another coffee for free, they also gave me a full loyalty card for another free one because I'd waited for the original coffee. And I was like, I've got two free coffees for making a fucking mess.
Could you just make a fucking mess more often than it clearly pays?
I was like, yeah. I was like,
So then there's a blackout.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm reminded of that scene in Series of Unfortunate Events where there is also a blackout at a wedding.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if Rikishi's read Series of Unfortunate Events. I hope so. There is a Beatrice in that. Pronounced Beatrice, not Beatrice.
In this analogy, Bun Castle is Count Olaf.
Okay.
Honestly,
I'm here for that.
Can someone please edit Jim Carrey so he's in Bun Castle's outfit? Thanks.
Incredible.
I'm going to take this moment to have an aside because you've just mentioned Beatrice.
Beatrice, darling.
Beatrice, right? So every day on my way back from work, on the bus, we drive past a like chocolatier, and it's called Chocolatris. But every day I'm like, Chocolatrice.
The true culprit, Chocolatrice.
You're there on the bus being like, I just wish I had some Chocolatrice.
The real casualty of Umineko is my fucking brain reading anything that's got ice at the end as Trice now.
Yeah. We've been corrupted.
We've been Italianized.
Oh, also, I would like to say, just before the lights go out, I'm kind of here for this. I'm not sure, this wasn't supposed to be flirting, I don't think, because I don't know. Basically, there's like implied like shipping between the two Chiestas, the blue and the pink one, the original two. Because like one of them, like 410 folds 45's ears over for her, which comes up later. It's relevant. But 45 says to her, like, not on the job. She's like, don't touch my ears on the job. And I'm like, actually, I'm kind of here for this. I'm here for the two clumsy bunny girls who are like elite snipers being like flirting at work.
To be fair, like two elite sniper hitmen flirting at work is like an incredible trope.
Yes.
I love whenever fanfic is like, they were hitmen, but also in love.
Yes. Like, fuck
yeah. But also, they had a terrible work-life balance.
As they all hitmen do, seemingly.
Yeah, notoriously.
I've played Absolutions.
Side note, one of my favorite videos of all time on the internet right now is Hitman reacts to the video game Hitman. And he's just like, yeah, that's what I would have done. And it's great. It's really good content. Anyway, back to the blackout. During the blackout, Gap shows up. They also assume that Beatrice probably showed up as well. Gap's like, they try to arrest me, but like, I can just escape because I'm Gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like, really, did you think putting me in prison would work? And I was like, that is one of the established rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm Dr. Nanjo in a dress. Who knows? Mm. But I'm Gap.
Yeah, Battler as well, like, when the lights go out, he like, makes a strange little noise. But what the narration actually says is that he says, ooh, like Maria. I'm like, I think it was probably supposed to be more of a, like, ugh. But, like, I was like, he did the Maria noise.
I like to think he was summoning Maria. He was like, there wasn't enough Maria in this chapter, let me make up for it.
There isn't enough Maria in this chapter, he's right.
Turns out, standing at the door is none other than Beatrice.
She's like, woomph, I'm here.
Yeah. And she cycles through a bunch of expressions as she starts being full, like, old Beatrice mode with, like, the deep voice and the cackling.
And the strange, strange twisty faces. And the Chiestas are all, like, aiming at her while they confirm her identity. And, like, everyone's like, well, obviously it's Beatrice, look at her.
They're basically, Virgilius sets off what I can only describe as a magical EMP.
Yeah, I described it as a big magic burst.
Yeah,
so we had that like stained glass window shattering animation before, because
I believe we have. I couldn't remember where from though.
Yeah, it was nice though. Yeah,
it looks nice.
Yeah, she shatters all the windows and all the Chiestas go into reboot mode, which I do really think is a bit of a design flaw.
I mean, it's happened before. It happened in episode 4.
Exactly. It seems to be actually quite easy to set off.
Yeah, we really should redo that. However, 45 and 410 are still up and running.
Because their ears were folded over. That's what, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
However, Gap teleports behind them and starts tickling their ears, which
makes them fall over. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about the implication that the ear is like, their ears are like very sensitive, like potentially erogenous zones. Yeah.
Yeah. 410 says, quote, nihihi, time's up, nyahaha, no, not there, no. Which, up to you, listener, how you want to read that, but I was a bit like, oh. Considering Umineko's current trajectory, I feel justified in being a bit like, seriously.
Okay, don't. So, then we,
I screenshotted the fucking thing, I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I'm going to be honest with you, Rowan, but sure.
Listeners, sure. Write in if you think that was a rape joke.
Is aggressive tickling sexual assault? Write in.
Not discourse I'm interested in having on the podcast. I don't think there's a way this conversation ends and no, all of us look good. However, I was a little bit icked by it, kind of considering the context, considering the implication that it might
be. Are we really doing this?
I just was a bit icked. That's all I'm saying. That's why I brought it up. I got some Umineko icks and I'm gonna bring them up.
Fair enough. Basically, Beatrice's mission is to get to Erica. The first line of defense is Gertrude, one of Delanor's subordinates, if you do not remember.
Gertrude's the, like, younger one.
The older one. She's, Cornelia's competent one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Cornelia's the younger one.
I can't believe you haven't kept track of the 4 million NPCs. I say NPCs as if there's a playable character in this game.
I was thinking this moment, I was like, wow, he really has abandoned the stakes. Like, it's been a hot second since the stakes did anything. And then Ryukishi was like, what's that, Rowan?
Yeah. you missed the stakes? Well,
here they are being weirdly horny. So the stakes, like, all fire at Gertrude's barrier. She has this whole thing where she's like, oh, you can't operate without the will of your master. And they all kind of look at Battler and they're like, now we know what he wants us to do. Like, good furniture, we understand his will without him having to say anything.
Because there's this whole thing, because they're like, oh no, but your master is Erica. And they're like, well, no, our master is Battler and Erica's speaking for him. But he doesn't need to be able to speak for us to know that he wants us to kill you.
Like, fair enough.
And they don't, like, actually hurt her, but they, like, distract her enough to, like, disable her barrier, and Beatrice just runs past.
Yeah,
it's like she's kind of really powerful. They say she could be called a literal Iron Maiden. I'm like, Ryukishi, please Google what an Iron Maiden is before you're like, this character is literally one of those.
That might be a translation thing, who knows, but yeah.
It's just fucking Bruce Dickinson in the, like, Gertrude's outfit, jeez.
No, she does just turn into a box with spikes in it. And you're like, well.
That is the other option. Well. And yeah, so she's like, she doesn't take any damage from this because she's, like, strong, but it does break down her barrier, and that's all they needed to do, because then Beato can run past.
I very much saw this as, like, it felt like a kind of little 2D platformer with Beatrice on the left running through, like, various different little obstacles that you had to, like, point and click adventure solve so that you could advance.
I will admit to thinking this did slap a little bit. Like, the music does really help.
Oh, the music is great, yeah.
Like, the image of, like, Beato, like, running down the hallway and, like, all of the different people coming in to, like...
Not just the hallway, I'm presuming running down the aisle.
Yeah,
as well.
So I can't remember at what point, but it's like she runs over the tables and the chiesters try and fire, and it's like the gold beam is like chasing her and it's like fucking up one of the banquet tables, and she's like running down the table as the beam is coming after, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? This does go hard, actually. This is fun. I love a good daring rescue. This was only missing Beato, like, lassoing a chandelier and, like, swinging off from it at one point. Like,
yeah.
Really, that's the only way this could be improved.
So, next up is Delanor. Who is pretty easily defeated. She misses her sword slice because of some popcorn, which coincidentally Lambda Delta is eating right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
obviously there's a bit of an agenda.
It's only interesting in that, like, it doesn't actually at any point ever say who throws the popcorn, but it's just like, I think that was popcorn. And then when, like, a couple of sentences later, it's like, Lambda's eating some popcorn, and you're like, interesting.
And then as Beatrice finally reaches Erica, no one shoots her, which is weird, right? Why haven't they shot her?
Yeah.
Turns out she's thrown down a white glove to signal that she's challenging Erica to a duel.
And they have to wait until Erica accepts or doesn't. before yeah, they consume
it. Yeah, this was one of the
it.
Weird things that I was like, oh, this is like self-contained Umineko rules. Like everyone just kind of accepts that they all know what the white glove means. They all know it means a jewel and they all know that they shouldn't fire at Beato. And it's just like one of those things like the red truth and the role of a detective that's just like, yeah, within the rules of Umineko, all these people know this
some
shit.
Kind of like demon ritual or something, I guess, that like they all know what this means. And if she picks it up, that means she accepts the jewel, and if she doesn't,
yeah,
then the Chiestas can all fire.
But it says that like she would then be known as a coward who like cowered away from the jewel. Like she's got no reason not to like just ignore it and like, because they'll kill Beato instantly, but then she'll always be known as a coward.
Yeah, because she'll be known as a coward because they say, like, if she has no doubt in her perfect closed room, then she shouldn't fear a duel because she'll win.
Yeah, which is fun.
And I do enjoy that because I'm like, oh, you're going to question Erica's pride? we all absolutely know exactly what's going to happen now, because like there's absolutely no way Erica like just goes, no, I have enough self-confidence and like to just back away. And she's like, no, I must assert my hubris at any opportunity.
If I know one thing about it, Erica Ferrudo's personality, is she absolutely adores flexing on these hoes.
Yes.
And she's been given an opportunity she believes to flex.
Yes. And Beatrice fucking knows that, so.
Oh, yeah.
Especially because Beatrice is like, oh, my jewel will be a perfect and impossible closed room. And Burncastle can't back down from trying that.
Having accepted the challenge, Erica, quote, throws off her wedding dress as though it was a cape, and underneath is her original outfit.
Including the original hairstyle and stuff. I'm like, I love this because I'm like, it implies she was wearing her normal clothes underneath, which is impossible because of the shape and style and everything of them. So I'm like, maybe she just threw off her entire, like, kind of skin and just had a different one underneath, you know?
A different set of skin underneath. Perhaps, you know how sometimes in pantomimes, like Cinderella or whatever, will do the like quick change. Well, they'll like have all these things coming across the stage and they'll bring a screen and she'll just like throw the dress on top. And it's like, oh, quick change. Cinderella's suddenly got the beautiful dress. I'm imagining that like all the Chiestas are like running around like, carrying like towels and blankets across the screen. And then someone's like coming across and she's like, funk. And then it's like, oh my God. Erica Ferrudo. Is the Umineko stage play a musical?
No, it's not, sadly.
It should be.
I would
the
watch
opening
it
number
if it was a musical.
Is like choreographed to the opening song of the anime, and I think that's about it.
I think Battler should have a sad kind of ballad where he's like, my parents are dead and I don't know who did it. Maybe it was my family.
Pitch. Umineko cats.
Yeah. It works in the sense that there's too many characters in both.
They all just get a song and then it's like, nah.
They all get an introduction song and then it's over because that's all they had time for.
I will put it out there. Few people I hate more than Ryokishi in the world. T.S. Eliot, definitely one of them. All my hoes hate T.S. Eliot.
That's
fuck
that's
that guy.
How's Andrew Lloyd Webber? Not high, right? Not high?
Listen, not my least favourite musical writer.
He was in the House of Lords as a Tory.
Yeah, no... That guy sucks.
I just saw the Sims relationship minus sign come up on my head with Andrew Lloyd Webber at that moment.
All you have to do to make me dislike someone is mention that they're a Tory. I will just sort of like... not to do Rowan's politics corner, but did you know if you were on a dating app and you're like above the age of like 30 or 35 or something... And you say no Tories, it's like a good like 15-20% of your dating pool. You can't like the possibility pool that you can't date. But if you're like our generation, it's 1.5% of your possible dating pool if you say no Tories.
Hell yeah.
Which is a really interesting way of conceptualizing that fact.
Yeah, I was going to say, like...
My brief foray into dating apps, I had No Tories, No Magic the Gathering players, which is an incredible way of opening things with people, because, like,
I should do that.
Like,
I should do that.
I get Tories, but what have you got against Magic the Gathering players? And I'm like, I'm glad you asked. So, anyway.
So when are you adding no people who have read hit visual novel Lumen Echo?
Now.
So you know how, like, in the end of The Hunger Games, Katniss chooses Peter because they've gone through so much together and they, like, they have some...
Okay, but Gale didn't stand a fucking chance.
She can't choose Gale. I would date somebody who'd read Lumen Echo and hated it because I feel like we'd have the, like, Katniss-Peter... like bond.
I thought you were going to say I'd only date someone who'd read Lumen Echo, because that otherwise how will you get the Katniss Peter bond? Like, I don't know how to say this. Like, this is clearly the seminal point in your life. Like, what else?
considering I'm pretty sure Katniss was like compet suffering we're all good, actually. We can end the metaphor here.
But was anyone actually wanting her to get with Gale? When was that gonna happen? I mean, Peter sucks, but like, Gale, his name's Gale.
Yeah,
anyway, back to Lumen Echo.
Listen, Liam Hemsworth is gonna play Geralt at some point. I can't go in too hard on the Liam Hemsworth hate yet.
I'm just like, did anyone really want Katniss to get with anyone? I'm just like, leave those men alone.
Katniss not only ace aro queen, also insufferable.
Hot takes on Katniss Everdeen right here.
Well, we've already gotten so Bold many people indeed. To hate us. We might as well go after the Hunger Games.
You fandom. Might have.
Okay, so we cut to Canon, who is dashing through the night.
The snow. Sorry.
Not leaving any splashes in the puddles. Not leaving any tracks.
I'm imagining him Naruto running.
Yeah, he's definitely Naruto running. And he's, like, thinking about all the people in the house. He's like, Kenzo sometimes was chill.
Yeah, sure. Right. So this is interesting, because I feel like this is some real lore we're getting here, where he's talking about all of the different people in the house. Apparently, Kenzo asked Canon to play pranks on people in the house, and I was like, interesting. Isn't that what Beatrice did? Was Kenzo all of the, oh, the windows are unlocked again stuff, was that Kenzo being like, Canon, play some pranks on people? And Canon's imagination was like, shall I just unlock some windows? I don't know. And also, Kenzo apparently let Canon shoot a lot of guns, which has not been mentioned before.
One, either this means Kenzo truly is the cheeky little fella we've been suspecting all along, or two, none of these are real memories. Canon has just invented these to believe them. Because, like, Kenzo's dead, so you can sort of just, like, make him do whatever you want, right? You can invent Kenzo memories.
Yeah, I mean, so I was wondering Kenzo. Whether this was, like, Canon, because obviously we're going with the Canon Shannon same person theory, whether this was like Canon Shannon lore and being like, this is an explanation for why Canon and Shannon might know how to use a gun.
Yeah.
If Kenzo has been like, oh yeah, like my little servants, you can use my guns, do a bit of shooting on the range or whatever, for fun. Which would mean they knew where the guns were kept and knew how to use them and that kind of thing.
So this is really funny, because it's always been like, oh, they're scared of the servants because they work directly under Kenzo. What if they're just really scared because Genji's really good with a gun?
Kenzo's, like, actually training them. He's like, someday I will need hitmen.
Yeah. Genji has the skills of Genji Overwatch because Kenzo's trained him.
Yeah.
He's, like, jumping around all the time, throwing shurikens.
So that's Kenzo. But also, like, he also says, like, oh, Kraus was kind of kind when he was alone. Natsui obviously wasn't. She was awful, but she was also kind of sad. Goda, I hate that guy. fucking love that line. He's just like, I fucking hate Goda. He did sometimes give me extra stew, but I just fucking hate Goda. I'm like, ugh.
Leave it there. Just, you know, Goda. I hate that guy.
God, I just...
Anyway, Kurosawa was really nice.
Yeah, I just... I savored that line so much.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, they kind of set up like, oh yeah, Kurosawa was kind of a mother figure. Genji was kind of a father figure who they kind of resented a bit, but was also mm-hmm. grateful for. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This is interesting.
Yeah.
And Shannon, naturally, is his sister and... I quote, without her, I wouldn't have been able to be me. Because they are the same person, and Shannon created him.
Mm. Or he created Shannon.
Is now a good time to bring up. So, I asked and I'm going to do it anyway.
No, just go for it. Just fucking go for it. Now is a good time to bring up. One of
the
things,
the main reason that I went through episodes 1-4 in the Let's Play was to check the status of what Shannon and Cannon were doing at any one point and who witnessed them.
Right.
Battler has, in episodes 1-4, never seen Shannon and Cannon together.
Interesting.
In fact, almost all of the Shannon and Cannon scenes, they are either on their own or with solely the servants, if they're together.
Right. Yeah.
The only exceptions to this, I believe, are they are together with Rosa when she finds the bodies in the chapel in episode 2. Battler, incidentally, is not there. By the time he gets there, they've split up. And they are together in front of a lot of the family in episode 4 when Kinzo's doing all of his magic shit and they're escaping from the dungeon. And so, like, all of that's clearly not happening anyway. Because it's all magic
bullshit. That's
really
interesting. Because we've talked about, like, Rosa having been in league with Beato in that, like, section. So it makes sense why she would also be in on the Canon Shannon.
Yeah, either that or she isn't. And that's just a narrative thing. Because Battler wasn't there to witness it. It can be objective. There could just be one person there.
Oh, yeah. Because you asked in the pod Discord about, like, because Battler is the
detective
for his viewpoint is objective, and Courtney's answer was yes until obvious magic shenanigans start happening, for example, the end of episode 1.
Yeah, so, like, he never sees Shannon and Cannon together at the same time, but there are a few things, like, end of episode 1, he sees a Beatrice. End of episode 2, he meets Kinzo and Beatrice in the study, and there's a whole goat party and stuff. So obviously that can't have really happened. But yeah, he never sees Shannon and Cannon together.
It kind of, I guess that kind of makes sense, because like the witch has quote unquote won in all of those episodes. So then, like, the witch truth is sort of confirmed. And so Battler ends up seeing the witch truth.
Yeah. And like in episode 4, for instance, he barely sees anything. Because he just sees a lot of dead people at the end, really. Most of the time, he's just being hearing other people talking about stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's interesting that Shannon Cannon can potentially be the same person.
Yeah. Interesting. So Cannon runs up to the locked
room. The guest
room. Which appears to be the like witch locked room that
the logic Atlas... error room.
Yeah, it's the like it's got fucked up purple stuff on it. Battler is like unconscious in the hallway because he's chosen to be in the hallway rather than like
he's got the big chain on his neck. All his fingernails are ripped off because he's tried to escape and claw his way out and stuff. It's all miserable.
Yeah. So. Cannon, when he does go into the room, like, notices that all the stuff that's happened over the episode in the, like, weird POV thing has occurred. Like, the window's been smashed and stuff.
Yeah, he's basically torn the room apart, trying to, like, make tools to get out and...
So, Cannon has a conversation with Battler where he's like, I don't like having debts, I owe... Does he say, like, I owe Shannon something? I'm gonna rescue you?
I think he says he owes Beatrice something.
Yeah, I think he does owe Beatrice. Which I believe this is in reference to the brooch.
Yeah, and him him getting a time with Jessica and
yeah.
Yeah, and so he's like, oh, okay, so we're switching places. So Cannon, slips in, sets the chain lock, Battler can be free. And Cannon goes and climbs in the closet.
Again, closet times.
Closet times. He dissipates into butterflies. This is, I don't know, I felt weird about this moment. I was having feelings about this. Because, Cannon has a bit of a moment where he's, obviously he's been, really in his head about all of this stuff. He's kind of appears to have some resolution in himself, and he gets into this closet and he's like, yeah, no, I can, this is fine. And he sort of has this release of emotions where he's just like it's okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am feeling stuff about this, but this is because I have decided that this is a trans person. Not because I have any other context. I was like, this could be a really interesting emotional moment if I knew what it was about. But sadly, I don't. I just have my possibilities. So I don't actually feel very emotional about this.
I interpret this as sad in the sense that it felt like Cannon had come some of the way into believing in himself because he was like, oh yeah, I got some time with Jessica and that was really nice. I was able to do something nice for myself because of Beatrice, and she probably helped me along some ways along the way. But then it's also kind of like, and now I can die because ultimately I'm furniture and I didn't have anything good waiting for me. And that's sad, I think, because I'm like, he's still like, he's too willing to sacrifice himself still. Because he still thinks he's furniture and there's nothing ever really left for him, which, to be fair, this chapter has somewhat confirmed, at least at this point, because he has lost the love games, so he's not gonna get his love, so, and he is dead already, kinda, so
yeah. No, it's interesting. I don't know, I didn't know fully what to make of that moment.
If you try and consider it from a Shannon and Cannon are the same person thing, it gets extremely confusing and I don't understand what's going on there.
Yeah, so we cut back to the fucking witch duel.
So they've styled it very similarly to the lovers duel from earlier with the flintlock pistols.
Yeah, the game's using the exact same art of the fancy flintlock pistols. Beato does have a line where Erica's sort of a bit disdainful towards them, and Beato's like, listen, demons have a thing about style, and I'm like, do they ever?
Really?
Have you seen the outfits?
I respect
prioritizing the drip above all else.
Yeah.
That's true. A respectable decision.
What I also love is that they haven't put bullets in this time. They are loading them with blue and red truths, at which point I realise that this is Danganronpa again.
It's Danron, except it's before Danron. So this
Danganronpa stole truth bullets from Umineko. For some context, Rowan, one of the big mechanics in the trials in Danganronpa is you get a gun loaded with facts, truths, and you shoot them at the statements that you want to contradict them. Literally, it's a shooter. It's a truth bullet. That's this.
Back in the day, people on Tumblr would call it shooty tooty muck refuting.
Thanks, Tumblr.
Incredible.
So, anyway, we get down to the duel. Erica's first move is... Okay, so basically Beatrice lays out the facts, which are Cannon went to the guest room, let Battler out, went in himself, closed the chain, and then did all that with magic, basically. Yeah.
And Lambda's overseeing the duel, and apparently the anonymous letter she received earlier contains Beatrice's logic error explanation.
Mm-hmm. So, Erica's first move is to be like, okay, I have to establish how Cannon left the cousin's room, because that was fully sealed.
Yeah.
And the seals haven't been broken. So she tries to fire a truth, but then, she sealed truths around the window in the adjacent room. Yeah. So she has to remove those seals, which she's not pleased about.
This was one that, right, a lot of this end of the chapter confused because this, the sealing of those truths, I originally thought, oh, perfect. This is a secret way that Delaina has managed to set it up so that she's fucking over Erica by sealing away the truths that she's then going to need. But then Delaina's like, oh, yeah, we can just get rid of those. And I'm like, why is Delaina... This happens, like, Delaina in all of what happens in this chapter seems really aligned with Erica, like, legitimately trying to help her, sad about anything that goes badly for her. And I'm like, but she thinks she hates her and she thinks she's evil.
Yeah, they have a couple of, like, emotional moments. Yeah, as well,
and I'm
like borderline flirting, and I'm like, because it's kind of set up like the love duel, and I'm like, okay, so Beato Battler are in love, Beato's fighting for Battler.
Erica
and
Delaina.
It's set up like Erica and Delaina are the other couple, and I'm like, what is it with this reading and just, like, weird implied lesbianism?
Like, I'm like, not necessarily not here for it, but, like, I'm at the point where I'm like, do you remember when Delaina visited Battler in the Golden Land that time and told him all of the stuff and was like, oh, yeah, I hate working for Erica. She's properly evil and I wish I didn't have to. Was that all a lie?
Maybe she's come round on Erica. Maybe they had some heart-to-heart off-screen.
Either that,
I mean, to
or...
be fair, Erica finally opens up to Delaina, like, just before the duel starts. She's like, thank you for sticking up for me that one time at the end of the last
episode.
Yeah,
she does say, no one's ever stuck up for me before. And they do have that moment, I guess, when Erica's telling her about the whole ex-boyfriend situation. But I'm just like, I really feel like those two moments alone wouldn't be enough to convince a being like Delaina that someone wasn't evil.
It's certainly not enough to convince me to come around on Erica. And like, I've not walked up to Battler and told him that I don't like her. Like, I'm not
but
here to expunge witches. She's literally a witch.
But hey ho. Yeah, sadly, yeah, Delaina doesn't betray Erica in this moment. She just goes, oh, right, I'll get rid of those seals around the... I'll let you use the window as part of your argument, basically.
It's which as, like, a big L for Erica that she's, like, had to do this, but also, like...
Yeah, I'm just not really sure why the window stuff was sealed off in the first place if they were just going to immediately undo it as soon as Erica wanted to use it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's about double standards or something. I don't know.
Anyway, so they do that.
Erica's argument basically stems down to, because she sealed off everyone else in the cousin's room. She's like, okay, that must mean there's some name trickery. That means there are actually six people in the adjacent room.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, that, say, Cannon's real name was actually George. Therefore, when I said George is in that room, it covered both George Shiremir and
George
Cannon.
Yeah. And I'm like, what with our George Shannon... sorry, not George. Cannon Shannon theory. You're like, oh, well, there is some name trickery things going on, but not...
Yeah.
The problem I'm having is that with our theory of Cannon and Shannon being the same person, I don't know how that fixes this problem. Because Shannon is still trapped in that room. She was named in that room. That room is still sealed.
Shannon is in the room with the window that's usable.
So Shannon can
She's in the adjacent room. She's not in the cousin's room.
I see. So Shannon can climb out, let Battler out, but then she'd be trapped.
Because, so the thing is, I have here, right, so in the first, when we had Kinzo being dead and everyone acknowledged the presence of Kinzo, you couldn't mistake it. It was like, it didn't say Kinzo was there.
No.
Because Kinzo wasn't there, everyone was just acknowledging the presence of Kinzo. Now you've said, Cannon is in this room and Shannon is in that room. So, if it is that You have to be able to move between these two rooms, because if it's everyone in the George Cannon room acknowledging the presence of Cannon, even though there's not actually a person there, because there's no way to get in and out of the room, and the same person, Shannon, needs to be in the other room, then she can't say, Cannon is in this room. She has to say, everyone acknowledges the presence of Cannon in this room.
Mm.
Unless the rules are different this time, which would suck.
It's difficult in this one because who's the detective as well, and how does that work with Red Truth?
The issue is Erica made sure this was worded in such a way that, like, everyone other than the people she's named is in the other room.
Yeah, she didn't say Cannon is in the cousin room. She said everyone else is in the cousin room.
She said everyone else is in the cousin room.
Right, okay. So Cannon isn't in the cousin room? There's no other person in there?
I guess.
If you're going with the Shannon theory, then there can't be.
Yeah.
Because Shannon's in the other room. Shannon is named and in the other room.
So we have other Red Truths around the people in that room, though? Don't we have, like, there's six people in that room?
No, we don't have numbers for them. We just have everyone else is in that room, which Erica did on purpose to make sure there'd be no name trickery.
So I guess the theory for how this works is that, yeah, Cannon disappears because he was never there. Shannon climbs out the window of the next room over, goes, releases Battler. But obviously we don't get a perspective into the next room over to see that Shannon has gone. Because Shannon actually, when she goes into the logic error room, will have to stay in there, surely.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's like Shannon is going over there, but she's Cannon also. So it is still Cannon. It's like both people at the same time.
But yeah, she won't be able to get out again once she's in that room.
Which, hold on, is how later, sorry, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but later Beato's like, Cannon's nowhere in the guest room. It's because it's Shannon again.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, well, yeah, we can come back to that. Where did we actually get to in the...
So, basically, Erica's theory fails because it's not name trickery in the way that she's suggesting, at least. It's not that someone shares a name.
Yeah.
So, but because Beatrice wants to, like, soundly defeat Erica, she's like, I'm going to even the playing field. I'm going to let you say that you don't know how Cannon escaped, but he did, because he had to for this whole theory to work. So you don't need to give me a theory as to how he escaped. You just need to give me a theory as to how he swapped places with Battler.
Yeah, so Beatrice, in that moment, she, like, it's established she could have won, because Erica's gun goes off in her hat, in her own hand. And Beatrice, instead of shooting Erica, just shoots the gun out of her hand instead. And so it's like, oh, she could have won, but instead she's like, no, we'll try again. We'll just solve the logic error room thing with Cannon instead.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to allow you to use premise X or whatever.
For how Cannon got out, yeah.
Yeah. The game says, even though this sort of logic would be a foul trick in the mystery genre, in this world where witches and mystery war, it is such a refined board layout. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much Umen Echo in a nutshell, huh?
Erica starts thinking about, she's like, wait, this seems really simple. Cannon just, like, goes in, swaps faces with Battler, and then, like, hides in the closet. Yeah. And then is like, no, wait a second, she's trapped me. Because there's one other place he could hide. Because what could happen is I could say he's in the closet, but he's really under the bed. Mm. But if I say he's under the bed, he'll be in the closet. And it means that the witch side
can change. I'm like, there's an easy fix for this, Erica. Just say he's in the room.
Yeah, I know.
Which doesn't work, but...
She's really congratulating herself on this one. She's like, ah, if I was a dumb, foolish idiot,
I would just say he's in the closet, yeah.
But I get it now. I understand. This is a beautiful game board that Beatrice has set up.
Yeah. She also asked Beatrice for, like, an absolute fuck ton of red truths that just, like, basically confirm the setup to make sure there's no other trickery going on.
She does like a full thing about how like Beatrice has shown her that there can be multiple truths in this world and how getting stuck on one minor truth can blind you to other truths.
And I'm just like, I don't know why this is the point that has made Erica realize this, honestly. I feel like there were better times, better, more kind of narrative times for her to have realized this than, is it the bed or the closet? But sure.
I'll be honest with you, I interpreted this not as Erica actually coming to the realization, but Erica wanting a few seconds to gloat before she proves that she's correct.
She's definitely gloating, yeah.
Oh boy, she loves to gloat.
Also, so, this was the moment in the narrative where I got a trophy for having clicked 30,000 times in Uman Echo. And I was extremely upset. I was like, no!
This is why you're so welcome. I'm just like, nah, we're good actually.
Anytime.
Control button, my beloved.
So, we get a dramatic final showdown as what basically happens is everything's been in a sort of recreation of the guest room, but Erica like transports us to the Golden Land by shooting 5 stakes into the closet where she thinks Canon is.
Yeah.
Says that she's carried out the rest of the Twilights, so we're in the Golden Land now.
And it's fun.
It's like the Golden Land, but there's the closet door like behind Beatrice and like a coffin.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
The line in the visual novel, which I presume is a fun quirk of translation, but it did make me chuckle. The 5 wedges of blue truth she released shot right past Beato's cheeks, hair, and shoulders. And like in my Uman Echo fueled phase, I did. In that moment, imagine the back of Beato's dress having a cutout and the bullets like just whistling past her butt cheeks. I was just like, she's cheeks out at a time like this.
Not them cheeks.
Not the cheeks out.
Whizzing past Beato's cheeks. And I was just like, at this of point, course. I've been reading Uman Echo for too long. Please let me be free.
So, Let's move on from Beato's cheeks.
yeah, that's on you, not Uman Echo, I'm afraid, Rowan.
I'm fully aware, it just made me chuckle and I wished to share.
So the closet door opens and inside is like a human figure covered by a raincoat. And then the raincoat like collapses into a mass of golden butterflies. As Beatrice says, Canon does not exist anywhere in the guest room, including the closet, the bedroom, and the bathroom.
Woo!
And Beatrice wins.
Yeah, and like, Erica, she sweats, she bleeds, she falls on the floor.
According to one of the Chiesa's... Oh, wait,
it's
no,
Gertrude.
According to Gertrude, she is suffering from third-degree conceptual denial syndrome.
Which is my favourite fucking thing. Like, I laughed so hard at that. Conceptual denial syndrome.
So good. So yeah, that's where Erica's at right now.
And Delaina's like, no! Burncastle, please resurrect this evil girl. And Burncastle's fucked off.
Yeah.
Yeah, Burncastle's just noped out. And Erica's like, please, because it means she won't get told off.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, baby, this was not a good relationship for you.
No. So, Erica does scramble to her legs one last time. She's like, her blood is turning into, like, golden petals as she walks, like, hobbles towards Beato and Vapla, so it looks weirdly beautiful.
I do like as well that, like, the screen blurs and does a bit of fading to black and back again, because we're seeing through Erica's eyes as she's, like, dying or whatever. That's quite fun.
Yeah, that is fun. Vathla and Beato hold the gun together as she presents her final argument.
I, Erica Furudo, shall bestow my final parting line. Hi, pleased to meet you. I am Erica Furido, the detective. I am most grateful for your warm welcome, even though I am an uninvited guest. I am the visitor, the 18th human on Rokinajima.
Sorry.
But even if you do join us, There are only 17 people.
Whoa! Yeah, whoa! So, really funny, because I, first of all, I assumed that Erica was going to deliver an actual theory or gotcha or something with this final line, and all she does is, like, is introduce herself again, which I don't know what she was going for with this one. Like, apart from setting up the next line, it basically does nothing for her. she's like, wait, I'm dying. I'll get them all by saying, hi, I'm Erica Furido. And you're like, yes, we know.
Name is Erica Furido, dementia raven. They have long blue purple hair. They kind of look a bit like Burn Castle.
Yes.
If you don't know who she is, like, get the hell out of here.
And then, yeah, and then they're like, there's only 17 people on Rokinajima. And we're like, yeah, we know. And I can't believe this, because you literally memed your way into this theory like several episodes ago, and we all just went, oh no, oh my god, oh no, you're right.
Yeah, I'm
and really you are upset. You're right.
I'm really upset about this,
because yeah, the only way this makes sense is Shannon crawls out of that window, and Shannon is the one who is hiding in the guest room, not Canon, and then the Red Truths work.
And that is where we end this.
Also,
I wanna point out that few things make me more livid than that fucking both of them holding the gun splash art.
I was gonna comment on the splash art as well.
Yeah. Shoot. Go on, kill
they're
me.
They're both, yeah, it's like, they're like holding, it's like Ghost. They're like holding the gun together, guiding each other's hands. And it's the most like fan surface ship bait thing I've ever seen. And I just think it's really funny.
What are you
funny.
Talking about? It's great.
I just think it's really funny that about... Rowan thought this was a crack ship, and now look at it, like...
I was thinking about it in High School Musical 2 when Gabriella's watching Troy teaching Sharpay how to play golf, and she gets him to like put his arms around her, and I'm like, misogyny. Whenever a woman is doing something, and in order to flirt, a guy like wraps fully around her and then shows her how to do it, I'm like,
kill.
This is why we need feminism. Kill him. It's one of my biggest icks.
I'm
fully siding with Erica Furido.
No! Well, she dead, so...
She kind of dead, actually.
Imagine how much of a shock that 17th person, there's only 17 people thing would have been if... you hadn't memed about Shannon and Canon being the same person a couple of episodes ago.
Okay. I'm going to say this. Episode 6 is very much a case of, please work it out. Please. I'm making it so obvious. And also, I assume Ryukishi wrote this line fully aware that the audience has probably worked it out at this point.
The fun thing, though, is that I can't believe that the way that it was worked out was... a joke.
I mean, I'd had wonders before. Like, I had there had been suspicions in the back of my mind previously about, like, is there some fuckery about, like, because we've only, like, the Red Truth has always been there are no more than.
Yes.
We've never had a there are 18. Yeah. And I was like, mm-hmm. I wonder. But I'd never really, like, put much thought or stock into it, yeah. Because
you can tell when you listen to the episode, because you're like, oh yeah, what if they're the same person? And then the further along the line of reasoning we go, thinking about it and realizing it makes sense, the more you're like, uh oh, no.
I feel like I'm like the fucking us approaching the end of Umineko, I feel like I'm in Toy Story 3 and I'm just like holding hands with Woody and Buzz as we're like traveling towards the incinerator as all of my bits wrap back around to kill me.
I'm obsessed with the fact that we did a Master Theory episode where we both had different theories and they're both ended up, they're gonna be the same theory. Like,
yeah,
we're both right.
Yeah.
I feel like we need another Master Theory episode to actually work out how our theories fit together.
Before we like are given the solution of Human Echo, I would like to do a Master Theory.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this planned out. Do not worry, gamers.
Nice, nice.
We will have time for a good.
Yeah, because I guess you know when the reveals are.
Yeah, so, I know when is a good time to go through it. Don't you worry.
But yeah, I now have a big old timeline for us to use and things. And
now we have the tea parties.
Yeah, tea party time.
So I'm going to just TLDR the first bit because we're going on quite a bit. And we can kind of sum it up. Fafnir and Beato get married.
Yeah, this crack ship of yours, Rowan, they get canonically married.
Yeah. I honestly was rather pissed. Considering how the last wedding in Umineko went for me, I was like not excited about getting another one. And I just spent the whole time being like, shut up.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely it's put up in contrast with that one. In that it's quite sweet. Beatrice starts talking like baby Trice again, but then can switch. She's somehow been able to find both personalities in herself or whatever.
I don't know. This feels really weird to me because I had this moment of like, this means that there's a version of Beato that's like completely subservient to Battler, and now that they're married, like we've managed to, in the narrative, justify a version of Beato that's like, I'm your second in command because I'm your wife, and like that means I'm one below you, but also wada wada or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was that or whether it was more like they just slotted in a bit of her talking like baby Trice again just to be like, oh, by the way, it is her. It's not a resurrection of the old one. This is her, but she has the old personality back. I don't know.
Look, I can see if I was 14 and on Tumblr and had been shipping Beato Battler, like, I would go feral for this. Like, I looked at this and I was like, this is some great fan service for the Beato Battler
shippers. It's fun.
Sadly, that's not me.
As soon as you realised it was becoming cool and actually happening, you went off it. It's funny.
I mean, you liked it
before it was cool, and then now that it's cool, nope.
I looked at it, I was like, I wonder if I can do this bit, and then like it wasn't really a very good bit to be doing because it was kind of just
it wasn't
canon,
yeah
was
it
like,
stopped oh, being a bit
yeah, it's not funny so I'm not gonna say it anymore.
Did someone say Beato Battler?
Yeah.
I was having a great time.
I bet you were.
Yeah.
There's more interesting things to discuss.
Yeah,
but I was living. I love my femdom queen.
It was sweet. And then, yeah, Battler recognizes the efforts of people.
Yes.
He's like, yo, canon, you did good.
Also, so if you went back to me at the beginning of the visual novel, like episode 2 or something, and you described the two wedding scenes and was like, which one is going to be between Battler and Beato?
Yeah.
This would not be the one that I was picking.
No,
like,
no.
Beato has really softened.
Or has she?
Or has she?
She's a lot nicer now.
I have a feeling that the previous episode 1-4, Beatrice was more of an act, but we'll see.
Being as she's Kinzo's drag personality.
fucking Kinzo's very drag race. So,
full circle.
So we come to Ange finishing the reading, and you know, she tells Featherine that, you know, she's...
She done.
She's worn out. Like, she's just watched a 6-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Rowan in this moment was like, me too.
Honestly, I was like, if I had read all of this at once, I would be feeling this way. But I had, like, also, like, had a break between the thing and the tea party. So I was also just... I was going into this relatively fresh.
Nice, nice.
As well. with renewed hatred. So I was just like, yeah, I bet if I'd read this all at once, I would be feeling yeah. like that. I really would.
Yeah, and Featherine's like, Angela's like, where's my reward? Featherine's like, I have an idea, but naturally she doesn't tell us, because why would she?
No. Yeah. So then we're back to the real world, yeah. and
Amakusa has gone to make a phone call.
Make a mysterious phone call.
I wanna point out in this moment, if you pronounce his name like a white person, like I keep accidentally doing, it rhymes. It's Amakusa Juza. I keep butchering the pronunciation of that one, which is very
funny. It's okay, Rowan. We have an entire podcast of you butchering Japanese pronunciation.
Oh god, I really hope we never get famous, because I'm going to be so easily cancelled.
It's like, this person does not learn other languages' pronunciations. Out.
We just glossed over me mispronouncing Jess's name as Jez. as well.
Wow. Like rhymes with Fez.
Not sure about that. I won't be taking that.
Well, like short for Jester.
So we then cut to Amakusa calling Okonogi, if you remember, the CEO of Ava's company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least high up. I can't remember what position he has. Anyway, they're laying out the plan to take out the Sumidera sister and her guards, remember from episode 4?
Yeah, because yeah. they haven't actually had their Rokunjima shootout fight thing yet.
Yes. So from the sounds of things, it's like he's got like a large
black bag.
Sniper rifle.
Yeah, so yeah. Or something. I assume it's a gun. It's talked about in the sense that it's probably illegal. So I don't know what Japan.
I was interpreted it as like a big sniper rifle. It says in his bio, if you check, that he's very good at counter sniping. So
interesting. You know, I did not check sense. That. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I was
it's
like
a handful of bunny girl figurines in his bag.
He just chucks them.
It's just some chiestas.
Yeah, I think. I don't know what Japanese gun laws were in the 1980s, but probably he wasn't allowed to have that.
They're still super strict to this day, yeah. so
as they should be.
Yeah, so
probably
I think
one of the strictest
this confirms,
gun laws in the world.
I reread the scene where Anja kills all of those guards with the stakes and then kills Kasumi on Rokunjima and stuff. I feel like this confirms that basically the human explanation for that is that Amakusa didn't actually stay behind at the boat. He set up somewhere nearby. He counter sniped all of the people and shot their bullets back into them and killed them and stuff, and it wasn't the stakes, it was him.
Yeah.
And she knew he was there, which is why she was acting all funny and pretending it was magic and stuff, rather than being surprised. So that's one thing that's been settled, I feel. But the rest of the conversation is really fucking weird.
Okonogi's like, are you two fucking by any chance? And
I mean,
Jewel Gentleman's like, nah.
I mean, that is weird, but that wasn't what I was thinking of.
Thank God they ain't fucking.
Yeah. Because they talk all about how Anja is a liability. But also
yes,
very important to protect
whether, yes, they talk about whether he's received something else as well.
Yeah, that. Something that can be handled in many ways, possibly without getting Amakusa's hands dirty, is the suggestion. And
so
I don't know
when
what
I
that is.
First read this, I always thought the implication was that he was also instructed to kill Ange.
Yeah,
with,
like, I was thinking like maybe it's some kind of poison or something.
I wasn't sure about that because too. They talk about Ange, they talk about her as a liability, but they say They say it's important to protect her and even say something about how it's about preserving world peace. And I don't know if that's a metaphor or something, or whether it's literally like, if somehow if she dies, there will be a war about something.
I always assumed it was like, they're worried she's like a wild card and that she hates Ava so much she might intentionally sabotage the company.
Yeah, I don't know, but
she technically owns the group.
They also call her a portable shrine. And I have no idea what that means. Because I'm like...
That could basically mean anything.
Is she portable on my shrine until I jeopardize world peace?
Go away. Like, because I'm just like, what does that mean? Like, in a religious context, like, she's not...
Like, do these fuckers believe in the witch interpretation and Ange is like an anti-witch thing the same way that the shrine on Rokujima was? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I have no idea. But basically, it's confirmed that Amakusa is having this phone call down the street at a portable phone because he doesn't want Ange to hear any of this. So, like, I'm not sure that he necessarily wants her dead, but he's certainly, like... trying to use her, him and Okanogi are trying to use her for something and doing stuff behind her back and all sorts. But I also don't know, like, why is any of this relevant in 1998? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Well, if anything, it's given us some explanation for stuff that happened in episode 4.
That's true.
There is that. There is that. Yeah.
And so they drive off to episode 4, basically. Yeah. It's like...
Jewel Genderman finishes his phone call and he goes back to Ange. And Ange is like, wow, that was a really long phone call. I got so bored. And I'm like, bitch, you sat and read Umineko and made him wait.
he was enjoying it. He was fucking enjoying it. More than she was,
she was reading it aloud.
But, also, to be fair, like, I'm surprised when, like, Andrew and Hashijo part ways, like, they're on quite good terms, and I'm like, because obviously Andrew, like, started off that interaction being like, who the fuck are you? Why are you writing fan fiction about my dead family? And why do you want me to read it for you and stuff? And then, like, at the end, she's like, sorry I said all of those things. I'm like, I'm not really sure what part of her reading all of that made her change her mind.
Listener, if someone is writing fan fiction about your dead family, you have a right to A, be mad, and B, stay mad.
Yeah, she's because Anja's like, I'll come read your next one if you want. And I'm like, I don't know why these two are now friends. It doesn't make sense to me.
Wait, can I just focus on the fact that Rowan forgot what comes after A?
No, it's because I said A, be mad. And then I was like, oh
right,
C,
okay.
Stay mad, but then I was like, no, it's B, because
A, stay mad, and one, stay mad.
A, be mad, C, one mad.
I love this. So, yeah, and then we get the whole implication that this, like, didn't happen, which makes sense. Anne just talked about the fact she doesn't have any memories of actually doing this.
Yeah.
And how she remembers being told by the publishing company she couldn't meet Hachijo.
Yeah, this is, like, so... I thought this was, like, an alternate fragment kind of situation in which, like, she's seeing the alternate fragment of when the publishing company did call her back, even though that didn't happen in the fragment she's actually from. Blah.
So, now we have...
The hidden tea party. Oh,
which
boy.
Which is, well, let's just say that it's a lot less sunshine and rainbows.
It's a lot more
than
Burn
the
Castle
wedding.
It's
yes. Burn Castle has sort of wandered off. She's pissed. She's like, I hate that this ended so predictably.
Yeah, she left at the ceremony before Erica actually died because she was like, I know where this is going. Erica's going to fucking fail. I don't even want to watch. See ya.
God. Fucking Burncastle's walking down this hallway. She sees a cat and the cat's like scampering off and she's like, whatever, I'll follow it. And then we have the line, if this is some new joke of Lambda's, mm-hmm. I'll cover her whole body with honey using my tongue as a reward. And I'm like...
There's the bit after hey. That. So she says that, and then she says, and then I'll stick parasol chocolates into her eyes so she'd never do it again. I have no idea what that's supposed to mean, but basically I think something with a stick on it. So yeah, it's again this weird kind of like kind of sexual but also kind of murdery double vibe that is, it's just grim.
It's classic yeah. how Ryukishi writes these two characters' relationships.
It is.
It's nothing new. So she follows the cat, and it looks like it's just chowing down on some raw meat. Yum.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, huh. And then she decides, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll kick the cat, and then it'll run to its master, and I'll find out who it is. I'm like, okay. Fucked up, I guess.
I think it's like a little cone of chocolate that then's got like an umbrella, like a twisty thing on it to look like the umbrella, and then an umbrella handle in the top, so it'll be like two pointy cones that you stick directly into her eyes.
Nice,
lovely, classy. and then who should show up but Featherine Augustus Aurora?
Yes, which I wasn't necessarily expecting, but maybe I should have been.
Burncastle cannot pronounce her name and calls her Our Aurora.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Featherine responds to this, by the way, by saying like, oh, yes, because Burncastle kicked that cat and it flew against the wall and just dissipated before Featherine arrived. And Featherine just says, that cat was you, a cat who has learnt to eat meat and sometimes choose its own path. I'm like, I hate to break this to you, game, but normal cats eat meat. They don't learn to eat meat. They just do that. That's a kind
actually,
of a natural
like,
thing.
Raw meat diet they... is quite a good thing for a cat. Like, you can, like, get...
I know I that's not I quite... know that's not the point, but it is. But it just made me laugh.
Yeah. I assume it's like domesticated cat parallels, maybe, but
yeah.
Did you know that cats domesticated themselves? They were also considered slay. Vermin in the medieval times, yes. because they carried fleas. They were like giant rats, so people would just like treat them the same.
And
like
in ancient
rats.
Egypt they were gods, so
yeah. Europeans hate cats. That is a real ancient slay. Egypt, fucking love them.
Yeah.
Featherine basically says she's had enough of this game, and she wants Burncastle to essentially chew apart and string out the guts.
Yeah, this whole conversation, it was really confusing up until I think right at the end what actually they were talking about. I think this is what I have gathered from this conversation, Courtney, please tell me if I'm right, that... okay. Featherine basically has said, Burncastle, I want you to be the game master for the next episode.
Yes.
Do whatever the fuck you want with it, but give me some answers. Yes. Because she wants she wants to check her answers, basically. She's like, I have a theory, I want to know if I'm right, so you can fuck things up however you want, but I want you to tell me if I'm right or not.
She also specifically wants everything. She compares it to like reading about like how things work backstage after seeing a play. She wants this thing gutted and spilled everywhere.
Okay, so she wants all of the knowledge of how every single bit of it works. She doesn't say like no lies, no obstructions, no omissions.
She's like, you can do whatever you want, but you can't lie.
Yeah, she also says like, oh, this will be great for you because it means you get to satisfy your grudge. And who does Burncastle have a grudge against? Like, I was thinking like the two obvious ones would be either Beatrice or Battler.
Honestly, I thought it was Lambda, right?
I don't know. But also, like, there's the implication that it could be against Featherine, because from their conversation right at the beginning, I feel like it's implied that Featherine was the witch that initially got Burncastle trapped in her logic error.
Well, she certainly like is describes her as a Miko at one point, or like implies that
she used to be her Miko, and Burncastle says like, "Oh, you're alive again," suggesting that like Featherine died at some point, and like, Yeah, I kind of...
If only we had someone who had read Higurashi to help.
And Burncastle says that...
I mean, I don't think this is even Higurashi stuff. I believe Featherine is original to Umineko. Okay.
Interesting. But it could be that Featherine
might
is
have
like
a Higurashi counterpart.
Yeah, but... it could be that like Featherine is like the new personality or like identity of the witch who was behind Higurashi or whatever. I don't know how Higurashi works. But yeah, like Burncastle says, like, oh, my games come from imitating you to Featherine and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, they have some history. I read it as Featherine was the one who got Burncastle stuck in a logic error, and therefore there's a grudge there. But like, I don't know whether that's what she's talking about.
Anyway, I am really interested to see what Burncastle does with the next episode. Like, if she does manage to succeed in all the demands that Featherine has placed before her, I think we could end up with a really interesting episode. I don't know how much Umineko will actually allow that to happen.
I don't know. However, there's also, like, because there's a few things. See. Burncastle says yes to this, but she says that she has no love, so some things might be interpreted weirdly. And I'm like, that's going to be really important to keep in mind when we're reading the next episode, that she does not have love, so therefore there's some things that we probably won't be able to see. But also my other question is, again, why are we having another episode? Because Battler just won. Beatrice is on his side. Like, as far as I'm aware, there's no real opponent left.
There's some stuff. Well, as I said, this isn't really a game in so much as a competition. This is a game to
find the truth,
string out the guts.
Yeah. So I guess like you could interpret it as this is the post game behind the scenes party. But I feel like as Battler is like the game master, the presiding lord of the territory or anything, that he should surely have a say about whether or not there is another episode. And he hasn't, at least so far, so I don't know whether the next episode will start with that happening or whether Burncastle somehow has more power to just take it off him somehow.
Well, I mean, Featherine does seem to be pretty powerful.
She does. She's been an observer and so, like, positioned so far, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she'd have to
just
be.
I mean, just because she's a figure that even Burncastle seems... at least a bit apprehensive about.
Yeah, she's certainly a newer witch. Burncastle's a newer witch than Featherine is by seemingly quite a long way. But yeah, stuff to think about.
And now, I have something for you. Did anyone check the profile?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I have...
So did you check one Erica Ferrudo's?
I...
And what happens if you execute her?
I don't remember whose profile it was, because I only wrote down three words and I highlighted them with a lot of exclamation marks. So it might have been hers. I wrote down, Rockin' Jima Explosion Incident!
I know! The fucking nukes interpretation!
Yeah, so Erica is killed in... the Rockin' Jima Explosion Incident.
Okay, well, what happened was the real Erica Ferrudo, whoever she may be, fell from a boat, and but like no one really cares about that because like nearby an explosion happened apparently. Her family says that she might have gone to Rockin' Jima and gotten caught up in the accident, but there's no evidence that she was. But she's sometimes included in forgeries, such as episodes 5 and 6.
Yes. So at least in that one, because obviously it's so difficult to tell whether there is one united timeline after 1986, like, or whether the storyline we're saying in 1998 with Ange and the surviving Ava and stuff is just one of many. But, like, at least in one fragment, Rockin' Jima fucking blew up.
But we've talked about this in the, like, and none were left alive thing, though, haven't we? It's like, there's got to be something that unites all of the interpretations that means when the seagulls cry, none were left alive. Yes. And I had this like typhoon interpretation because we've also spoke about like it needs to be something that's healthily foreshadowed.
Yeah.
Apparently, Rokkenjima just explodes.
So we've had a bit of foreshadowing.
We did talk about that time when we were discussing this last, that Kinzo's body's always put in the boiler, and whether that just makes the entire house fucking go up.
He's just so soaked in absinthe.
For example, in episode 4, when Ange goes to Rokkenjima, Mammon, who's with her, comments that there isn't a mansion there. Like, she can't see the mansion. And Ange says, this is around where it would be.
Yeah, and they do talk several times in Ange's bit as well about how it was considered a missing persons case for quite a while. I don't really know why an entire mansion blowing up, even if they don't find body parts, would be considered missing persons. I think it would be fairly normal to consider that at least several people
like they didn't know who was actually on the island, like,
but they
could
had
have been
a survivor
of...
I guess Eva could have lied, but
and also maybe someone was like on a walk in the woods when the mansion exploded, because Eva survived.
Yeah, true.
So obviously the whole island didn't explode, it was just the mansion.
Yeah.
Do we have any foreshadowing for how the mansion exploded?
I don't think we have...
This is a pretty big detail.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but like, unless
there's
it is something to do
stuff,
with...
But I don't know if I want
to
point it out
there
to
is, unless it's something about Kinzo's body in the boiler room. What other things cause explosions?
I will give you, I'll give you a hint here. There's a, something that's quite specific about Rokkenjima, the island itself.
Ooh.
It's not a fucking volcano, no.
It's not a volcano.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's been mentioned that it's a volcano. There might be some secret tunnels under it.
It does have secret tunnels. Are the secret tunnels lined with dynamite?
Something, something war.
Oh god, was it like an old military base or something?
I'm intrigued, actually. I might need to go back and look at... Because they do talk in earlier... Like, in episode 1, I think they talk about how Kinzo purchased the island.
Because he did make all of his money in, like, arms...
He was quite close with the people running the country, stuff about war...
It would explain why there's just like suddenly like so many guns on the island.
It would explain why there was secret, like if you found an island and it had secret military installation stuff in it already, like the secret tunnels and stuff, and you just built your mansion over the top of it with an access thing, that would be quite fun, wouldn't it? And then you could hide your secret gold in one of the bits of it.
Yeah, these kind of things.
The gold, which we know he did actually hide in there, because we've seen it in the tunnels, and the game's gone out of its way to be like, the gold is actually there in the tunnels. This isn't fake. It's not a trick.
Time to collect some evidence, I think. But yeah, so maybe there's some war explosives in the tunnels with the gold, or.
I think if I was rewriting Umineko, I'd make it the type. I will accept the military base explanation. I'm very excited to go and tell Will that in a second.
Yeah.
but I would make it the typhoon, because one of the things I liked about the typhoon ending is because it's like constantly being foreshadowed. Like every scene, it's like it's raining. There's a storm. We can't get off. There's like always the rain.
Unless it's something like the lightning bolt from the typhoon fucking like hits something that causes the explosion. That would be a bit of a coincidence, maybe, but then...
There is also another piece of foreshadowing that's been brought up, especially quite a few times in the early bit.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I feel like the shrine is important there. I don't know why. Shrine, mirror. That's been brought up quite a lot in the early bit.
you turn the mirror and it, like... when the storm stops, the sunbeam hits the mirror and then the rays bounce off, and it does like when you're like evaporating in antlers, like a series of a magnifying glasses.
The mirror
glasses,
was like...
which lead directly into a tunnel, which explodes some dynamite.
Here's my new theory that the spirit mirror was attached to a really, really long, like, electrical conductor rod that was attached to the top of the shrine, so it was a lightning rod that, but because that's now gone, the lightning hits the mansion instead. And and explodes all of the hidden dynamite that was underneath it.
Goodness me.
So anyway, yeah, that's quite a big reveal that Rikishi just buried in executing Erica Ferrudo on the
this
profiles.
Is why I fucking go and check all of the profiles after each episode. Because in case of shit like that, I can't believe I missed the counter sniping thing with Amakusa. I did read them all, but I just missed it.
Yeah, it's mentioned very like, I think it's like literally in the first couple of lines, just like he's good at counter sniping. By the way,
interesting. The only other things I got from these menus, by the way, is that it was a bit surprising to me actually, was that Kinzo used to hold ceremonies with the shrine's spirit mirror. With fishermen from Najima several times a year, because they ascribed some kind of religious importance to it. And not only is that kind of strange for, like, in general, but also that just doesn't seem like something Kinzo would do.
He was handing out weapons to them so that they would defend against any untoward presence coming to the island. Still his goal.
And he was like, let's do our spirit mirror ceremony where I give you guns.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like, I don't know whether the shrine has anything to do with it, but I feel like the shrine and the spirit mirror is something that has been talked about quite a lot. And in the human explanation, there is no relevance so far.
Unless, okay, there's something Kinzo has to reset every year to stop the island from exploding. And last year, because Kashanan knew about it, they reset the mirror to give them another year, but this year they haven't reset it, and that's why it's going to explode.
Yeah, that would be like a fail-safe kind of self-destruct system that goes off. Yeah. If
and when Kinzo died, they were the only people
knew
that
about it.
Knew about
it. By the way, I like Kashanan, because it's unfortunate that Shannon and Canon's names both end in non. But I mean, that's the point. But it means that you can't just. It's very difficult to find a blend.
So I will say that the common fandom name is Shakanan.
Rather than Kashanan.
When people were theorizing about this, people called it Shakanan Triche.
I do have one final theory. Ooh. As to why we need to have another.
Oh, wait, no. Actually, before you go into those, did we enjoy episode 6?
Yeah. I think so. What happened?
It was quite fun. I enjoyed it more than I remembered enjoying it, so that was fun. Erica's good.
I enjoyed Erica was a little shit, but she got her comeuppance.
She sure did die.
Battler's awful, like, popped collar outfit was a massive highlight for me. That may be, like, one of my favourite elements of the visual novel as a whole. And the fact that debuted this episode is a good boon.
I enjoyed the what at least seemed like the absolute train wreck of Battler's Game Master.
Yeah.
Yeah, to this day, I still don't know whether that was on
purpose. Yeah, if it turns out to have been on purpose, then it's genius. If it turns out not to be, then it's so fucking funny.
Okay, if you guys at the end of this thing come to a conclusion about whether he did this on purpose, please let me know, because I still don't know. And I think it's funnier if he didn't.
Yeah.
But he probably did. But I think it's really funny if he just, like, BS'd his way into reviving his GS.
Shit.
I think Ryukishi wants us to have enough faith in Battler to think that he did this on purpose, but I don't know that I have that faith.
I kind of prefer it if he didn't. If he didn't mean to do this.
Battler does a whoopsie.
And it just happens to turn out well.
It worked out really well for him. Battler being incompetent once again.
Yeah.
snags on the girl.
It was said in red, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed this more than I thought than I did the first time. There was a lot less love game stuff than I remember there being, which I think worked in its favor.
Yeah, I did appreciate that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it normally. I think since having the Shikanon theory and being able to explore that and stuff, I've really enjoyed it because it feels like things are kind of coming together a bit. I feel like we've worked something out before the game explicitly told us, kind of.
I was so glad. I was so worried it was going to come to the end of this episode and they were going to say that there are 17 people. There would be 17 people in
your what?
I think if we'd gotten this to that and we hadn't realized the foreshadowing to begin with, I probably would have had to take a break for a moment, Echo. Like, if that had been a completely clean reveal to me, I would have been like, we're taking a week off, lads. I cannot be doing
this shit. I'd have definitely needed to go back and look for the foreshadowing, because I would have known it would have been there, but I would have needed to see it.
But I mean, this episode goes really hard on setting that up. It's like, if you haven't worked this out yet, I am going to scream it at you before I literally
Amazing.
Well, if that's everyone's final comments, I would like to close out the episode by sharing my final theory, which is the theory as to why we need one more episode of Umineko. Oh. And that's because there is one final hater still.
You. I knew it!
I'm gonna be real. I don't know if episode 7 is gonna change your mind on anything.
Episode
7! We do have some new OCs. Which are always great.
Say that. Hang on, Courtney. We're not done.
Oh, we're not done with OCs.
Ah! I can't believe that. Like,
there's some quite major characters that I do know of the existence of because of the Twitter. Like, I saw them and knew their names, and I was like, these are very clearly Umineko characters. Because you cannot mistake the designs, and I saw them and I'm like, they're really big characters in the fandom and they have not
every time yet. I think we're just not done.
Nah,
when will this end?
Nah.
So next week we will be reading I very nicely already divided up all the episodes.
A kind and benevolent witch.
So we are starting Requiem of the Golden Witch, episode 7. We will be reading from the prologue to the end of chapter 2, which is titled Rosa's Confession.
Ooh.
Thanks, Rosa.
I want to
looking forward to hearing what that is.
I don't. Anything that Rosa feels the need to confess has to be so fucking bad, considering the stuff she just does normally and thinks it's fine. Ugh.
Yeah.
Unless her confession is like, I was nice once, and you're like, what happened to that?
Oh boy.
All our social media is in the description, including the pod Tumblr. I'm plugging it again. Yes. Go follow it. It's a good
time. We've got some good stuff happening.
Follow our personal Twitters. Please send me DMs about liking the show, because I got one this week and it made my day.
Yes.
So please do that.
That's adorable.
If you follow me, I'm really sorry. I don't tweet that much about Umineko, but when I do, you know when I do. And on that note, thank you and good night.
Goodbye. Good night.